Hello and welcome to a June afternoon on Monday, December 1st, 2014. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Today on the show, M.K. McNaughton, Karen Beeson, and Colleen Goldrich from Annie Kales will be here to highlight this year's gallery walk. We'll learn about volunteering for Orca Ski and Snowboard Program, the Orca Ski and Snowboard Program. James Hoagland will highlight activities surrounding World AIDS Day. And we'll find out what's happening with a folk festival on First Friday. Plus, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A recently released federal report shows rates of violence against young Native people are the highest in the country compared to any other group. Christine Trudeau reports key members of the report's task force are working to address problems youth face.
A 2013 Department of Justice initiative set forth a task force to examine what's happening to Native youth, specifically violence. The DOJ report details initiatives to strengthen overall Native youth welfare, expand VAWA amendments to include protection over Native youth, increase funds to support tribal justice systems, and ensure White House and congressional compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act. Former Senator Byron Dorgan sits as co-chairman on the advisory committee to the task force.
You know, this will be on the desks of members of Congress and the president. And there will be pressure, I think, from every Indian tribe in the country that has this report as well to say to the Congress, here it is, here's what you have to do, and now we expect you to do it.
Following the report's release, Dorgan hosted a panel discussion in Washington, D.C. It included White House and health representatives, as well as young Native people, and actor Cheske Spencer, known for his role in the Vampire Twilight saga. Spencer expressed the importance of his visit, saying, he's no stranger to the many hard realities facing Native youth today.
You know, the suicide statistic is, that's it, for me, it keeps getting bigger and bigger each time I look at it. And I don't know where you start with that with kids, especially in this, because kids, I knew a kid, 11-year-old suicide victim. She was 11 years old. I mean, how old do you have to be? How bad is it? And it's bad. It's pretty bad.
To Senator Dorgan, the battle is just beginning.
You know, we're talking about housing, health care, education, foster care. I mean, it's hard to just say, all right, we know what the problem is, because it's not one set of problems. It's a wide range of problems.
Special Assistant to the President for Native American Affairs, Jody Gillette, emphasized the White House's role in working with the DOJ's task force in securing as much as they can into permanent policy before the current president's term is up.
We are in the final quarter of this administration, and thinking forward about what can we do, what is the most impactful investments that we can make to really, really turn the pages on the dark chapters of the relations between the United States and tribes.
A White House Tribal Nations Conference is set to take place on December 3rd, where Gillette says the president will be in discussion with tribal leaders on a number of Native issues. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
Obama administration cabinet secretaries are among those taking part in this week's White House Tribal Nations Conference. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell will hold a panel discussion on education reform and climate change. Other issues will be discussed, like economic development and trust responsibilities. The conference is an opportunity for tribal leaders to interact directly with the president and his administration. It begins Wednesday morning in Washington, D.C., and will be streamed live at doi.gov. The inauguration of Alaska's new governor and lieutenant governor takes place today. A swearing-in ceremony for Bill Walker and Byron Mallott is being held in Juneau. The transition team includes a number of Alaska Native people. The team recently met to address issues in the state, including many facing Alaska Native people like hunting and fishing rights, education, and tribal sovereignty. Mallott, who initially ran for governor before joining the ticket as lieutenant governor, is a well-known Native leader in the state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian country. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 1st, 2014. Scott Burton, your host. And now with me in the studio is the whole crew from Annie Kales, the First Friday Gallery Walk, M.K. McNaughton, Karen Beeson, and Colleen Goldrich. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah. So why don't we start with you, Colleen, and tell us a little bit about what Annie Kales is up to these days and your relationship with the store.
Well, I'm the owner of Annie Kales. I bought it in June of 2013. The store is full of all sorts of new things for the holidays. So we've got, you know, all kinds of decorations, ornaments, candles, throws, art, pottery, jewelry. We're stocked full.
All right.
Of neat things, yeah.
Yeah. And when did you said you bought it in June of 2013,
mm-hmm.
but Annie Kales has been around for a while, right?
Since 1975. So this is the end of our 39th year. In January, it's 40 years old. So January is going to be a huge year, lots of fun, lots of parties, lots of great shows coming up.
But you're saying right now MK and Karen represent the last show of the 39th year, very
yep.
auspicious. Important.
Wow. Nice way to wrap it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
So why don't we start with you, MK? You'll be showing, you'll be opening a show that starts there this Friday. Tell us about the name of the show and what you'll be showing.
I talked to Colleen a few months ago about doing a series of Juno landscapes, and I like to paint in oil on canvas. So I started collecting images and painting in the fall when it was raining, gray, mm-hmm. gray. and I've always loved the Juno fall because the orange is so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I run a lot on the Dan Muller Trail and up above the Crow Hill condos.
Mm.
And the meadow there, it would be the grayest day, and I'd get up there and it was orange, burning orange. So I kind of had a little love affair with the orange muskeg this fall. I call this my orange muskeg series. there are several featuring that same area and other views of Juno that are special to me and hopefully to others. But it's a nice celebration in different sizes, 1 by 1 foot to 4 by 5 foot.
And just remarkable colors and light that you capture in some of the pieces that I've seen online.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your process like when you're running and you see an image that you want to paint? How's it work for you?
I was getting an awful lot of pictures in low light, so I started uh-huh. asking friends for help. and so some of the images are thanks to friends for sharing their photos with me. But I carry my phone around with me when I run in my pocket and take pictures with my iPhone, which is great. And then I print them out and paint in the comfort of my studio. I don't actually sit in the muskeg. But I have really discovered that the oranges and the reds intensify with the wet. You know, do you remember we had that little tiny dry
mm-hmm.
spell
yeah.
at the end of the fall? And all the colors sort of drained out, and I thought, oh, it's all gone. And then it rained again, and the color came back. So I this show has helped me appreciate the rain a little bit for the way it intensifies the beauty of our falls.
Mm-hmm. Interesting how art makes us pay attention.
Yeah, appreciate.
And appreciate things, too. All right, so Karen, tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you'll be showing.
Well, I love paper. So this year I decided to mold some paper in old copper jello molds.
Oh, yeah?
And so I have a sun and a moon that I'm going to, I have them all framed up. And some have ravens, and most of them have, like, feathers. So they're, I don't know, they're kind of mask-like.
And if you had to identify yourself as an artist in general, what are some of the mediums that you work in?
Paper is my favorite. So I usually have handmade paper. So I make it out of the plants that I find here in town, make different kinds of paper, and I print different animals on it. So I have a whole series of linoleum prints on handmade paper.
I read that, linoleum prints. What's that mean?
It's the best way to put it is like a garbage can, like a Rubbermaid garbage can. You cut out your image on that, and I ink it up and run it through the press on my own paper.
Okay.
So I think I have like 27 different animals now.
Okay. And you're no stranger to Annie Kales, right?
No, I've been there a long time. I think this is my 11th or 12th gallery walk.
Okay. How did you get into art? When did you start making it, and why?
Ooh. I started because of Alice Terzdag. She was the teacher out at the university forever, and I worked for her in the printmaking lab for a long time. So I never really graduated for 12 years, so I could always use the lab out there. And she taught me everything about printmaking. And then she brought in this fabulous papermaker, Edna Jackson, from Cake, taught us all how to make paper out of the plants here in Southeast Alaska, and I fell in love with paper. I've been making it since then. So it's gone 20-some years now, I think.
Yeah, and I read somewhere, maybe on your website, that you actually will harvest plants in the summer and then use them later. Tell us about that.
I go out and gather, like, Devil's Club, and I cook it up and take the bark off of it, freeze it in the freezer, go out in the spring and get all my seaweed, because it's only good in the spring, and freeze it up in little packages. Then I have all my plants, that like beech grass and stuff, that I have to cook down. So I do all my cooking in the garage, strip all it down to just the fiber, put them in little bags, and freeze them in the freezer until I need them.
Okay, interesting.
So I don't know, it's kind of weird, but...
You must enjoy the process.
Yeah, I like being outside, so...
Oh, great way to mix
those
two. Yeah, mix art and being outside. And I was going to ask you, Colleen, you know, she's been in your gallery for so long. What would you say the public tends to appreciate about her work?
Well, in the work of Karen's that we carry around, her paper fish and sculptures, and then her her animal prints, definitely those. But I think for... the other thing Karen does is fabric art.
Okay.
And we have, she made us these great ravens that have extra tufts on. And so we have those hanging in the store. They're a hanging decoration. But she's, so for gallery walk, the other thing that she's bringing is some appliques of ravens, and for quilts or for putting on clothing or whatever you would want to do with them. So that's a new thing this year, too. But so the gallery walk thing with Karen is always, what is she going to come up with this year? Because it's always fun. There's a sense of humor to it in some way. And we never, it's different every year. Mm-hmm. So I think the appreciation is the anticipation of waiting to see what she's going to do this year. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that both artists in the studio today, you both enjoy being outside, and it sort of, it lends itself to your art. Was that sort of a theme that you were thinking about, or it just happened?
No, it just happened. It's, yeah. Yes, I thought of that all the way through.
Totally.
It's exactly
very
my plan.
Deliberate. Yeah. Very deliberate.
Yeah.
MK, tell us a little bit more about sort of your process once you've taken the pictures. Tell us about what the time is like for you, either when you're out running and taking pictures or observing the outdoors, or then what it's like in your studio. How would you describe that time?
Well, I do love the way art helps me see the world and have an appreciation for it. Of course, I think probably we all think Juneau's beautiful, but we all get a little bummed by the rain, too. If when you get out into it, you can get past that once you're dressed and out in it properly. But I love painting in layers. So for me, the process of painting is looking at things in depth, looking at the background, and then adding a second layer of solid color and then filling in tiny details. So oil painting is a magical layering process, and each painting has at least four sessions embedded in it, each of the paintings.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe the time as you go through that? Does it fly by?
It does. Yes, definitely does. I love being an artist and working in my studio. I really love my little space.
That's great. And if you listeners out there would like to see some of this art in person or talk to either of these artists, you can do that this Friday, right? Colleen, tell us the details about Friday.
Yeah, so Friday is Gallery Walk, and it's all over downtown. And so it's a huge event. Front Street will be closed. There's just so much going on. But for us, all of Gallery Walk starts at 4:30, and it usually goes until 9, somewhere in there, maybe a little later. That everything will be up during the day before that, but really the reception itself starts at 4:30, and both Karen and MK will be there at that time. So you can come in and meet them and go through the store, and we'll have refreshments, and it'll be a lot of fun.
I bet it will.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like fun. Looking forward to it. Anything that any of you would like to add?
I might just add that I also have giclée prints. So if somebody doesn't have space for an enormous painting, I'm making some prints that are really nice ink. The giclée is a nice process, so they're archival quality and will last a long, long time and are easy to frame up and hang. They're smaller, 8 by 10 inches. And I'll also have some little sets of cards of these new images.
And she'll have some mini originals as well.
Oh yeah, the mini.
So there's a great price range to be had. The other thing I didn't want to forget was to mention that we wrap, so we can wrap any gifts for Christmas or Hanukkah or birthdays or whatever you need them wrapped for. That's one of our services. And if you would like to see samples of Karen and MK's work, it's on our website at anniekales.com, and also on our Facebook page at Annie Kales on Facebook.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, you three.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you on Friday.
Great.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. To a connoisseur, not all sugars taste the same. A hummingbird dips its long, slender bill into a scarlet, tube-shaped flower to reach the nectar deep within. When it flies off, the bird carries pollen from the plant, which it rubs off on the next flower from which it sips. Like some bees, hummingbirds specialize in nectar feeding and are essential pollinators. Even though they also eat tiny insects, they are the ultimate nectar connoisseurs, and the sugar they prefer and seek in flowers is sucrose. Other kinds of birds, less specialized to nectar, also visit flowers for a taste of the sweet stuff. The flowers they visit likely have a more open shape, with nectar more accessible to a non-specialist's bill. These birds may still be important pollinators, but the sugar they sample is likely different from what hummingbirds prefer. As flowering plants and birds co-evolved, each to benefit from the other, it seems likely that plants evolved the type of sugar best suited to the pollinators on hand, offering it in their flowers. It's a win-win for all concerned. The plants that need the birds, and the birds that want the sugar. But not just any sugar, the right sugar.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 1st, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now is the ORCA Program Director, Tristan Knutson-Lombardo. Did I get it right?
You got it. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, welcome. For those folks that may not know about ORCA, why don't you give us ORCA 101?
ORCA 101. Well, ORCA outdoor stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access, is a program of SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living. We're a region-wide nonprofit, actually, that serves people with disabilities as well as seniors and elders, and we provide a really wide range of services, but one of our probably more popular and visible programs is the ORCA program, and we do year-round recreation for people with disabilities. So our goal is to get you out, no matter what your disability is, out kayaking, hiking, camping, skiing, snowboarding in the wintertime. No matter the disability, we're here to help.
Oh, yeah, awesome, awesome program. And right now you're gearing up for the ski and snowboard program, right?
We are, yeah, and we're looking for volunteers.
Cool. Well, tell us what it looks like. I know, but in case someone hasn't seen it, what do you guys do up there on the mountain or cross-country trails or wherever?
Yeah, so in the wintertime, January through the end of the ski season, which is April 14th roughly is the last day the mountain's open, we're up every weekend skiing and snowboarding with folks, and we are always looking for volunteers to be ski buddies or partners with people, or to help with lessons if they're interested. We provide all the training for people that they would ever need and the support, and there are a lot of cool benefits to volunteering. You can earn some Eagle Crest lift tickets for extra days. We cover your lift ticket that day of, and you get to really meet some cool people that you might not meet otherwise, both volunteers and program participants. So there's a lot of cool benefits. And we're a really small staff. We only have 3 people in the Juneau Orca office, but we do hundreds of lessons and provide hundreds of ski buddies each year. So we really require or count on volunteers to help with that capacity building.
And tell us a little bit about, it sounds like ski buddy, mm-hmm. all the way up to more of a hands-on style instructor.
Yeah.
Describe for us the degrees that one can become involved.
Yeah, so for some people, they're just interested in, you know, we have a lot of people in our program who are pretty independent, and they're, you know, we are their opportunity to go up and ski the mountain just like everybody else does in the community, and they might just need an assistant or somebody to help them in case there's a decision that needs to be made and they need help making that decision, or just some general safety stuff. But you're pretty much their buddy, so to speak, or their pal for the day, and you get to ski or snowboard around, whereas other people are learning to ski or might be using more technical equipment or pieces of adaptive equipment, and we have a lot of volunteers that are interested in using that equipment, and we teach and train them on it, and then they get to help out with lessons or teach lessons to people learning or to people improving their skills. So you don't have to be a double black diamond skier. Steep chutes is not a requirement for people. So we really just want anybody that feels comfortable on their own skis. Groomed greens and blues are kind of basic proficiency. So if you can do that, then you can help us out.
Okay. And in the past, what kind of person have you found is a good example of maybe a volunteer?
That's a really good question, actually. I think people that are willing to make somewhat of a commitment. You don't have to volunteer on any regular basis, but what we find is the people that do say, okay, I can do 1 weekend or 1 weekend day a week, or I can do 2 times a month, something that's semi-regular, because you get to meet people and you get to know them over time and develop relationships. And I think that people find that is maybe more rewarding because they've been part of a community, and more than just walking away with a lift ticket, they also make some memories and some new friends. And we actually have had volunteers come to our program and meet people in the program, and then a friendship or relationship does blossom out of that, and so they hang out other times of the year, or they've developed a friendship. So it's kind of cool to see that as well.
Absolutely. And what does a day look like for a volunteer? What time do they get there? What time do they leave?
Volunteers usually meet us up at the mountain at about 9:15 in the morning. And then we have a morning session that starts at 10. So from 10 to noon, we're out skiing, snowboarding, doing that kind of stuff. And then we take an hour break for lunch, and then in the afternoon, 1 to 3, we're out again, and then the day wraps up right about 3:30, somewhere in there. So it's not a bad day, and you have some time at the beginning and the end of the day to ski and snowboard on your own too. So yeah,
it's a lot of fun. I've participated in this program before, and it is a lot of fun meeting cool people and getting to ski and be up on the mountain.
Yeah, I love it.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else should I ask you? How does someone get in contact with you?
So we do have a volunteer information night for people that are curious. It's this Thursday at 4:00, 4 to 5 at COPA. So stop by, grab a coffee or tea, and you can meet staff and just ask questions. There's no commitment. You're not signing up for anything necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a couple of trainings in mid-December as well as one in January. So everyone is required to do at least one day of training with us, just to go over safety and also for you to ask questions and get to figure out what our program's about. You can call us, 586-0104 is the number. You can find us on Facebook. Search for SAIL, S-A-I-L, on Facebook. You can find us on the web. Google us. We're not on Instagram or Vine or any of those yet, but but you can find us.
And do you find in the past you've had a shortage of volunteers or too many?
We never have too many volunteers. We're pretty much, our capacity is limited by how many volunteers we have. So the more volunteers, the more people we can get up. We always have more people we can get out in the mountain. It's just a matter of can we fill that capacity. So.
And if you had someone who's listening right now and they're kind of on the fence, how would you convince them, Tristan?
I would say two things is we take care of your lift ticket that day and you can earn additional lift tickets, almost as many as you want. So there's that tangible benefit. And I really do think we have seen more and more people coming back year after year to volunteer. So we have volunteers that have been with us for 5-6 years now, and they enjoy the program. They enjoy the people that they meet. And I think that is the best selling point, I think.
Sustainability, yeah. Return.
Yeah. And actually, of the three staff in the Juneau Orca office, two of them came in as volunteers, and job opportunities came up, and they got a job. So it could potentially lead to a job opportunity. So,
well, sounds good. So it sounds like on Facebook or 5860104, you have this informational meeting at COPA this Thursday, right?
Yep. Yeah.
From 4 to 5.
Yep.
A couple trainings coming up. And if you have any questions, I'm sure you can just call Tristan.
That's right.
At 5860104. Are we missing anything?
You got it all.
All right, Tristan.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 1st of December, 2014. 1955, Montgomery, Alabama. On this day, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat in the front of a bus to a white passenger. She was the secretary of her local chapter of the NAACP. It was the beginning of a boycott of the city-owned bus company. Martin Luther King Jr. took up the cause, and it was, for many people, the beginning of the civil rights movement. 1860, on this date, the first installment of Charles Dickens's Great Expectations was published. He needed money. He just bought a big house. He was separated from his wife. He had to pay her separate living expenses, and he'd opened a magazine called All the Year Round, and it was not making money. So he wrote a new novel, and he published it as a serial in his magazine, and it did very well. The Ford Motor Company introduced the assembly line on this date in 1913. Before that, they built the chassis of a car, and it sat in one place, and the workers came to the chassis, and they assembled it, the Model T, that is, which was very popular, but Henry Ford wanted to sell more. The price tag was $850, and he wanted to bring that down. So they built a conveyor belt system. It was about 150 feet long, and as the chassis of a Model T was dragged along the line with a winch, each worker on the assembly contributed his part, and they cut production time of a single automobile from 12 and a half hours down to just under 6, and then when they put workers on both sides of the assembly line, they got it down to 2.5 hours. And by mid-1914, it took 93 minutes to build a car, and Ford was able to sell them for $300 apiece. It's the birthday of the comedian and writer Sarah Silverman, born in Bedford, New Hampshire, 1970. Author of a best-selling memoir, Bedwetter, Stories of Courage, Redemption, and Pea. And it's the birthday of the filmmaker Woody Allen, born in 1935, Allen Stewart Konigsberg, in the Flatbush section of Brooklyn. Hated school, wanted to write comedy, changed his name to Haywood Allen, writing scripts for The Ed Sullivan Show, and in 1966 made his first movie, What's Up, Tiger Lily. His big hit, Annie Hall, came out in 1977. He's since made, on average, one movie every year for the last 40 years. Woody Allen, who said, "Life is full of loneliness and misery and suffering and unhappiness, and it's all over much too quickly." Here's a poem for today by Kirsten Dierking entitled Wilderness. The first few days we have slow mornings out on the lake, long afternoons to walk in the woods, evenings of leisurely innings of baseball unwinding over the radio. But time, moves faster as the days of the week accumulate behind us. Friday passes in a flash of ease. Only now and again it seems the waves washing on shore have reached an ending. At dinner, I say, tomorrow morning, it's back to real life. You sweep your hand through the last of the day and say there's nothing unreal about this. But the scent of pine is faint on my skin, as if I had been a wilderness once, as we merge into traffic, as the lake falls farther away behind us. A poem by Kirsten Dierking, Wilderness, from her collection Tether, published by Spout Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 1st, 2014. Scott Burton, your host. And now with me in the studio is Joe Clark and James Hoagland to talk about World AIDS Day. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, nice to have you. Thanks for coming down. So let's talk about World AIDS Day and also AAAA. Tell us about that acronym, James.
Absolutely. The Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association is better known in the community as 4AAs. And we are the statewide nonprofit organization that manages direct service to people living with HIV and AIDS in the state. So what that means is that we help people afford their prescription medication. We help them with medical case management to make sure that they're involved in treatment. We also do housing support, nutrition, transportation, really whatever is going to help somebody stay in treatment to keep their virus suppressed. That's our goal.
Okay. And James, you're the coordinator of the Southeast.
Yeah, I run the Juno office, which is a part-time office, and we're headquartered in Anchorage.
And so can you give us an example, not to use anyone's name or anything, but think of maybe a client here in or an individual that you work with in Southeast or in Juno, and what are some direct things that you do with that person?
Sure. Well, they really do run the gamut. Mm-hmm. Some people we do just help them afford their really, really expensive medications that they need to take every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And some people need additional support paying their rent. They may have a disability related to having HIV, and that prevents them from being able to work. So we help them cover their bills through some federal funds that we get so that, again, they can take care of themselves and stay healthy.
Okay. And Joe, tell us a little bit about the board and your relationship with it.
Yeah, so I get the privilege of working with James and doing our fundraisers and helping out spread the message that, you know, HIV has transitioned since, you know, the 80s and early 90s, and the image of HIV, how serious it was back then, and we're just here to say that it's still here and that it's still affecting so many people. And I just feel, you know, lucky that I get to work in the field doing that kind of thing and kind of making changes there and getting to interact with folks who are directly affected every day with something that has kind of dipped under the radar for a lot of folks.
Yeah, and why has it dipped under the radar, would you all say?
Well, I think like what Joe was saying about how the disease has transitioned from a death sentence to a chronic illness that somebody has to manage for their life, that's a totally different situation to handle. And we're not seeing people die in the thousands of of numbers like we did in the beginning of the epidemic. So for a lot of people, the urgency or the sense of urgency has gone away. But what they don't see is the millions of people who are managing this disease every day and facing a lot of challenges, a lot of issues with accessibility to the medications, to quality health insurance, things like that, that are going to help them live the healthy life that they can now.
And what do those medications look like these days? Are these things that folks can take at home? Do they need to go to the hospital? I've heard that it sometimes can be pretty extensive. Can you outline that for us?
Sure. A lot of people actually now are able to take one pill a day.
Okay.
Typically, we see about half of our clients taking two or three different medications every day, a couple times a day, and some of them are able to handle just one pill a day. They manage it themselves, but these medications are still incredibly expensive. And for a long time, insurance companies weren't covering anything related to HIV, and so that's been an issue for a long time. And just now we're starting to see some breakthroughs with that through things like the Affordable Care Act.
I see. Yeah. And so today, today is World AIDS Day, right? Yeah. December 1st. And I think I read online somewhere that this has been happening since the 80s.
Yeah, since 1987.
Yeah. Aside from coming on radio shows and communities, what are folks doing around the world that you've heard of today?
Well, one of the really popular things to do is to have a candlelight vigil, and in some ways it's a somber event. It's a remembrance, a time where everybody around the world can remember the people they've lost personally. Yeah. Most people, at least over 30, I think, have known somebody, either a family member or a friend, a lover, a work colleague, somebody they knew from their community. We've all been touched by this disease in one way or another, and it's really an annual opportunity to come together as a community and say, this is still an issue, and we honor those people who have gone before us and the millions of people who are living and surviving every day with HIV now.
Yeah, and, we talk about HIV and a lot of people's minds jump to Africa, and there are still 15 countries where the population, 75% of the population has HIV, which is a staggering number. And it's crazy to think about in our environment, in Southeast Alaska, where those numbers are a lot lower. But this is an awesome opportunity to be in solidarity with, all of those people. This is a global event and something that people here in Southeast can get involved with tonight at our candlelight vigil to say, we care. We care that this is still happening and that it's so intense all over the world, and especially in, many African countries and really everywhere. It's spreading everywhere, too. So.
Sure. Any idea what the numbers are in Southeast or in Juneau?
Well, Juneau, actually Southeast, represents about 5% of our cases statewide. Of course, the concentration is in the Anchorage area. But we are there, and I think that even though the numbers are small here, it shows how HIV doesn't discriminate against any possible social category. People of every race, ethnicity, nation, gender, sexuality, age have HIV and are at risk to contract it. HIV is something that virtually anyone can get through unprotected sex. Most people in the world have had unprotected sex at one point in their lives or are currently. And so, this is something that most people do, and so most people are at risk.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, you mentioned that you're going to be having a organized candlelight vigil tonight. Yep. Tell us about that, when and where.
Yeah, so our candlelight vigil will be at 6 o'clock tonight at McPheeters Hall. That's Trinity Episcopal Church, I think 4th and Gold. So 6 o'clock. We'll have a little, program, a couple speakers, the Juno Pride Chorus is going to be singing some songs, and it'll be just a really nice event to think about this. So.
Okay, so that's tonight at 6 at McPheeters, in honor of World AIDS Day. If somebody can't make it to that but wants to support 4As, is that right, James?
Four A's.
How can they do that?
They can reach out to us through our website. It's alaskanaids.org. And get in touch with me. I run the programming here in Southeast, and we do have opportunities for volunteers. One recent volunteer opportunity was a training for people to learn how to test individuals and out in the community with our rapid HIV test, which is an oral swab test that you can do at outreach events. We do it in the office, and that's a service that we like to provide to the community. So we'd love to train more volunteers on how to operate that test. So you can be right there on the front lines.
An untrained hospital worker can do this test.
Absolutely.
Wow. And you mentioned your office. Where are you located?
We're located right across the hall from Rainforest Yoga, upstairs from the Gold Town Nickelodeon.
Okay.
In the Emporium Mall.
Okay. Well, you can meet James or Joe tonight at 6 p.m. at McFeeters and a lot of other cool folks. Is there anything we're missing that you guys would like to add?
I just would love to invite anybody who's ever been affected by HIV or AIDS to come on out and lift up a name of someone that you've lost that you would like us to remember.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Take care.
I learned how to get along and saw your back from out of space. I just walked in to find you here with that bad look.
online pre-bidding for the KTOO Holiday Auction continues through December 5th at ktoo.org. Then, listen in on KTOO and KRNN on Saturday, December 6th from 8 a.m. to noon for your final chance at fabulous auction items. From A Dance of Hands Massage, Gross Alaska Theaters, Tracy's Crab Shack, and more. Details at ktoo.org.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 1st, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now is the president, Aaron Hansen, of the Alaska Folk Festival. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, so we're starting to ramp up into Folk Fest season a little bit, eh?
Yeah, yep, we are. The planning is kind of getting a little bit more intense. We're getting excited, and we just announced our guest artist for 2015, so that's exciting, too.
You want to wait till the end of the interview to talk about
it? Yeah, we can do the big reveal at the end.
Yep.
That sounds good.
People are like, who is it? Who is it? Really good. Exciting. But First Friday.
Yeah. We are doing something new this year. The Senate building has kindly donated space, and we are going to have a First Friday, the big gallery walk, pop-up store for the Folk Fest. So we've got a whole bunch of our merchandise. It was that Ray Troll poster.
Super popular, right?
Really popular. We sold out really fast in festival, and so we actually reordered merchandise, because we had a lot of people asking for it, and so we, you know, heard the call. And, yeah, so we'll be selling our Rachel poster, T-shirts, sweatshirts, and I think we might even have some music going. We're going to have cookies. We're basically just really excited and want to see people. So, yeah.
Well, and great sort of Alaskana art-related gifts, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it was last year was our 40th year, so it's a really it's a great anniversary year to have the merchandise for. And, yeah, it's a great Christmas present.
Folk Fest.
Exactly. You can sign up for your membership early if you want to. So, yeah.
And so Senate building, you'll be there?
Yep, we'll be at the Senate building on the second floor where the fly fishing shop used to be. So I think we'll be pretty easy to spot. We're planning, you know, like I said, on having some music. I don't know if it's going to be live or if it's going to be CDs. But, yeah, we're just excited to be able to kind of be out in the community a couple more instances than just Folk Fest. So.
And speaking of that, you're sort of building your presence outside of Folk Fest, it sounds like.
Yeah. In the past, the festival has sponsored some events. We have, in the last couple of years, it's been a little ramped down. We're trying to really bring it back and really sort of just be more of a community presence. And this year we did the Falltoberfest, which was early October. We had six bands play over two nights. It was really successful.
It was fun.
We'll probably be trying to do something like that in the future. But, you know, and also just like I said, this pop-up store is new for us. We've got our merchandise at the Jack year-round. But we really want to remind people, you know, that folk music is alive and well. There's lots of really cool organizations in town that we partner with, like Gold Street Music and the Contra Dancers. But, yeah, the festival, I don't know. I think a lot of people, the Alaska Folk Fest really just happens in April.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really part of people's, I don't know, just it's not in their minds that it's a thing the rest of the year. And so we're kind of trying to, you know, be a little bit more present.
Okay. And another thing you have going on probably are your monthly meetings, right?
Yep. Yep. Our next board meeting is next Tuesday, and we do that here at K2, which is awesome. And anyone who wants to attend is invited to attend. They're actually getting a little bit more interesting now as we ramp up to festival. But, yeah, we have those on the first Tuesday of the – or the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m.
And you can find out more information about that at akfolkfestival.org, right?
Yep. You got it.
Okay. Anything else before the big reveal?
Mostly just stop by and say hi to us at Gallery Walk. It's such a big night, and it's so fun. If you haven't ever been to Gallery Walk, every month there's a First Friday event, but Gallery Walk is the first Friday in December. Every place downtown has events, has stuff going on, and we're really excited that the Senate building offered to host us. So we're just really excited to be part of that event and see people and wish them a happy holidays.
All right.
Yeah.
That's this Friday. All right. Drum roll.
And 2015's.
15 guest artist.
Folk Fest guest artist is the Byron Berline Band, which is super exciting because Byron Berline is a bluegrass legend.
Mm-hmm.
He's played with everybody. He's like a three-time national fiddle champion. He runs his own festival in Oklahoma, so he loves like the whole concept of our festival. And he'll be bringing, it's a six-piece Western swing band.
Get your dancing shoes out,
oh,
right?
Oh, my gosh. No kidding. Yeah, we're going to have them play a dance for us. They're going to be playing the standard guest spots on Thursday and Sunday, as well as a dance probably on Saturday. We've got, they're going to have amazing, amazing workshops. So we're really excited for the Byron Berline Band. If you, you know, I think one of our most popular bands we've had was probably Hot Club of Cowtown.
Mm-hmm.
If you like that kind of music, or if you like bluegrass, or if you like any kind of American sort of roots music, you're going to love the Byron Berline Band.
These guys can do just about anything, I suspect.
They're unbelievable. Every one of them is a total rock star, and they're just thrilled to come. They're all bringing their families. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Mike Sicarius a little earlier, who met Byron down at Port Townsend Fiddletunes.
Oh, cool.
He's like, he's the nicest guy.
Yeah.
Super approachable. And mm-hmm. I know that's something you all look for in a guest artist.
Yes, very much so. Paul Dizier, who's one of our newest board members, this was actually his first year on the board, and he pitched them. He had met them at a festival in Oklahoma, and part of why he really thought they would be a great fit is that they're super approachable and they love to play. So they're very excited to get out and jam with everybody.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have more time to talk about that
yes.
in the future. But in the meantime, it's this Friday. Remind us of the time and the place once more.
This Friday from 4 to 7 during the gallery walk at the Senate building on the second floor, and just follow the sounds of sweet, sweet American music.
Great, Erin. Thanks. Anything you want to add?
No, thank you so much.
All right, here's a little Byron Berline for our listening enjoyment.
Now Byron here, it's pretty clear, has got his name. He gets to play the fiddle and the mandolin a little all night, and he even gets paid. He puts a fiddle that rings, the bow that sings together, and what he's got is the perfect occupation, skipping along on top. It's an ideal situation where the music never stops. Every day's an inspiration, skipping along on top. Pick up the fiddle, pick up the bow, get it while it's hot. Like a stone across the water, skipping along on top. Pretty good looking, the ladies love his style. When he starts fiddling, old timers grin wider than a country mile. When his elbow pumps, the whole joint jumps, he's a gusher of good times. And we all get rich off the son of a be careful. And we all get rich off the son of a
be careful, I say.
Son of an old time fiddler from Caldwell, Kansas.
There you go.
Learned to play fiddle when he was three. Little bitty fiddle on his daddy's knee.
Yes, sir.
Country boy, raised on a farm, smack dab on the border between Kansas and Oklahoma. In fact, both states claim it. Kansas claims he's from Oklahoma. Oklahoma claims he's from Kansas. Went to school at Oklahoma. Sure did, boomer sooner. Right after college, his career in music took off. He went to Nashville, played on the Grand Ole Opry, played fiddle for the father of bluegrass, Bill Monroe. Play in the evening, a bouncing down high on the hill, and above the town of Uncle, play the fiddle over howling and rain. You can hear it talk, you can hear it sing. Went on to record with your longtime friends from Missouri, the Tillers. Dooley slipping up the holler, Dooley trying to make a dollar, Dooley.
leave. Give me a swan or I'll pay you back someday. Dooley slipping up the holler. Dooley trying to make a dollar. Dooley, give me a swaller. I'll pay you back someday. I'll pay you back someday. I moved out to L.A. to record not only with the best of bluegrass and country, but the best of rock and roll as well. Bob Dylan, Rod Stewart, Elton John, Linda Ronstadt, and groups like the Eagles and the Birds, and even the Rolling Stones. Let It Bleed. A big star out in Hollywood, and of course, in order to be a big star in Hollywood, you've got to be in the movies. Byron has played on lots of soundtracks, Blaze, Back to the Future 3, he's even been in some big movies, The Rose, Basic Instinct. You weren't fiddling around with Sharon Stone in that movie, were you? Well, that's good. Not exactly the kind of vicar you normally play. Different idea of Jim. Well, Byron got his big start in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie called Stay Hungry.
And Arnold, if you... Due to the temperature inversion, which continues to exist in the Mendenhall Valley, the city and borough of Juneau has issued an air emergency effective immediately. The area covered by this emergency extends from the airport, north to Mendenhall Glacier, west to Montana Creek, south along the east shore of Auk Lake, and includes the east half of the Mendenhall Peninsula. The air emergency means that all wood stove and fireplace burning is prohibited except for pellet stoves. For an update on the status of this air emergency, please call 586-5333.
The Zimbabwe Artist Project, featuring the work of over two dozen fabric artists and board painters from Zimbabwe's capital, once again returns to Juneau for the gallery walk at the KTOO building on December 5th from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Come enjoy beautiful board paintings and fabric panels. That's art from Zimbabwe, Friday night during gallery walk at KTOO.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, December 1st, 2014. Tomorrow, Ken Fix will be your host, and he'll talk with Marion Call about Thursday's KRNN Singer-Songwriter Spotlight Concert. We'll find out about the Reach Artists Show this Friday at the Canvas. Heather Hogland will highlight this week's salsa dance classes. We'll talk with members of the Thunder Mountain High School's fundraising event, Breakfast with Santa, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more Tuesday at 3 here on a Juneau Afternoon. And the weather tomorrow, Tuesday, snow in the morning, changing to rain during the afternoon, snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches during the morning, snow level rising to 1,000 feet during the afternoon, highs around 35. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 38.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas.
We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.